Live from the city that works, this is the Steve Cochran Show.
On 720 WGY.
943, you know, we're blessed to be here. I'm blessed to have this job, and one of the responsibilities I think that comes with it is to spread some positive news and inspirational news, even in the toughest of times. We're talking about depression and bipolar disorder and things you can do, and we know that lives get changed when people take those steps. And the scourge of addiction is certainly part of that story as well, that we could do some positive things about. My brother is very proud of, and he should be, of his 11 years that he'll have in January. And I welcome to the studio now, as mentioned a few moments ago, Wes, who is now coming up on 6 months. Is that right?
Actually, a little over 9 months.
9 months. And Wes's dad as well, a former Schaumburg cop. What am I calling you?
Yeah, that's right.
Schaumburg. How about if I turn your microphone on? But I don't.
Schaumburg cops, fine.
Tom from Schaumburg. Nice to see both of you. Wes, let me start with you. You're how old now?
24.
And when did you start using?
First time I picked up a drink and used regularly was about 13.
And let's just get rid of some of the myths here, because this can happen to anybody. Your parents split up, but you had a good relationship at home with both mom and dad in separate houses and all the things that go with a divorce. So this wasn't something where you had people throwing things at you and a big dysfunctional situation.
Correct. Yes. The parents divorced when I was 5 years old. I was in and out between my dad's house and my mom's house. And it was a normal childhood. It wasn't anything out of the ordinary. No dysfunctionality.
So you're hiding drinking when you're 13 or 14. What's the next step after that that makes it worse?
I did that for a while, and until I didn't start using drugs or anything until after high school.
Okay.
I tried marijuana for the first time.
College, home, where were you?
I was living at home at the time.
Okay.
And I just got out of high school, and I tried pot for the first time, and right there I thought I found the answer, but years down the road, which was completely wrong.
Not such an answer after all.
Exactly.
At this point, though, you're still trying hard to hide it, right? You're trying to not show that you're getting messed up here?
Right. Yeah. At the time when I was using, I was hiding it from everyone because I didn't want people to know. I didn't want that stigma attached to my name.
I know you know this now, but what kids don't know is your parents are a lot smarter than you think they are. And even if they want to be in denial, they usually know when there's something wrong. So then I understand, if I have the story right, you lost a bunch of weight and you got even more detached.
Correct. Yeah. I had a falling out with my dad after high school, and I ended up moving to my mom's house, which was a using environment and an extremely enabling environment. And, that was kind of my downfall at that point. Still hiding it as much as I could. And, it took a toll on me after a while.
Yeah, enablers and codependers. I come from that side of the equation, and I was Hall of Fame. I was Olympic-level codependent and the enabler of all enablers, and you don't help.
Not at all, right?
Because you get up every morning and you go, well, we'll get through today. Well, in the process of getting through today, the addict gets a little bit worse. All right, Dad, let me get you in here. Pull that microphone a little closer to you, if you would, as well. What age do you think you knew he had a problem?
About 15 is when he was binge drinking.
And what do you do as a father? And by the way, this is made tougher because, you're a cop.
Well, the other issue is that you're actually fighting against the other parent when you have,
and that could happen whether you're divorced or not,
right?
Yeah,
right. Because mothers are very enabling in their nature, because they just want to.
Well, as I said, I know a lot of enabling dads too. Not me, but
they want to take care of their child and give them the best and give them things they have. So when Wes was binge drinking, at the time I wanted to give him some treatment, but. I was having some conflict with my ex-wife, and you have to have both parents to agree to it, and it just didn't go the direction that I wanted it to go, and it went the other direction. And
days turn into weeks, turn into months, and right. Now the problem's way worse.
Right.
When did you go complete tough love? Is that what he's referring to as a falling out with you?
Well, we had a falling out because he had a party at the house and a lot of people over, and he decided after him and I had the argument to move to his mom's. And then there was a change in his physical stature and the way he looked, and it just gradually went down. And then in the beginning of December of last year, Wes's stepmom and I did an intervention, actually, and talked him into going into a detox center.
Now, my experience with this, Wes, with my brother, was that, you know, your dad can't save you. I couldn't save my brother. It's got to be somebody like you who says, I don't want to die.
Correct.
I don't want to live like this anymore. Was that yours as well?
It was. You know, I reached the point where I was on my knees begging someone for help, you know, whether it be I was talking to myself or my higher power. It was, you know, it was at that point I knew I needed to get help. And you could have your support system be there for you and support you through it. They could, you know, they must have told me 100 times, you need help. But until I was willing to actually get help, you know, I wasn't going to do it.
How about the denial, too? This is for Wes or for Tom. How good, Wes, did you get at hiding it? And Tom, at what point did you think, you know, I'm your father. I know what you're doing. You can't continue to hide this. I mean, how did first Wes?
That's a good point. When did you confront him, even if you knew it when he was 15?
Yeah, because the whole denial. Oh, I'm fine. I'm not doing anything.
We got a mic here. I think.
Yeah, they shut off on their own sometimes, Wes. Yeah. I apologize. I don't know if it's like a timer where the squirrel quits running or what the case is.
It's I'm sorry. What was the question?
So, how good did you get at hiding it, basically?
You know, I was an addict. I'm an addict.
You're probably never as good at it as you thought you were.
Exactly. It was about, you know, manipulation, denial. I was, in denial of myself as well. I didn't want to, you know, title myself as an addict because I didn't know it at the time.
But even after the intervention, did you think, you know what, now everybody knows, now I'm going to have to do something about it. I'm going to have to check into a facility.
Right.
Was that part of it? That's an interesting question. Was that part of it? Because once you know your secret's out, you're not hiding it anymore. I'm just lying to myself. Is that part of reaching the bottom?
Oh, for sure. It's not so much the physical bottom. For me, it was the mental bottom. Waking up every day just not enjoying life to its fullest. And that was...
Well, especially at your age. I mean, every day ought to be, I get out of bed, I feel pretty good, I'm not sore and stiff, I can run 5 miles if I want to, I can do whatever I want to do, I got my whole life ahead of you. So thank God you came to your senses.
Definitely. You know, I'm not too much of a fan of cardio, but.
Yeah. Well, you know, if we were going to profile, and Andre, see if you agree with this, we're going to profile, because I've seen a lot of drunks and drug addicts in my life, as your dad has as well. You don't fit the bill. And I know you're clean now, but you're not clean for that long. You're only clean for a few months. But I hope occasionally you look in the mirror and you notice the physical transformation as well as you look healthy.
I have, you know, coming up on, it'll be a year and 3 months, which is, you know, the huge stepping stone after getting over that mental, the mental part of it. And and I look in the mirror and, you know, I see the light now. You know, I'm enlightened.
Talking to Wes and Tom, son and father. Tom, you know, again, I know this from a sibling standpoint, but also from having other people in my life. My parents were certainly alcoholics. It was always every day I was waiting for the shoe to drop. You just never knew when the next phone call was going to be, you know, more bad news or more trouble. And it just eats away at you. I mean, it had to be a nightmare for you.
It was, and it just, the thing for me was the transformation in his physical appearance. It was perfectly obvious to me that something was really going on and something was amiss. And, you know, you see the pupil dilation, and I know what the signs are. And it just got to the point where, in all honesty, I had like a little bird in the head or whatever, a little voice telling me it's time to do an intervention. And the problem is a lot of people don't listen to the voice. You know, I call it a higher power that's really speaking to you.
Sure.
Sometimes we're just too noisy. We just don't hear what we should be hearing.
Yeah, and it's very tough not to be codependent when it's your kid. It's very tough not to be enabling when it's your kid. And it's very tough not to go, listen, I know how good he is. I know the inner good. I know how much good is in there. He's going to turn this around. But at some point, as we mentioned, it's got to be his decision.
Right. It has to absolutely be his decision.
You can't love him enough to make him quit.
Right. I can't make him do it. So I did an intervention. I managed to speak, talk him into going to a detox center where he spent 6 days. And after that, we took them to Rosecrans, which was a great program.
Rosecrans is phenomenal. And, Andre, you spent more time with our friends at Rosecrans than I have. But I know the good they do every day. So talk about those
guys. I've gone out to the facility in Rockford. It's an amazing place. You know, a lot of people just think of treatment facilities as what you see on television, you know, a white room with doctors and coats. it's not that at all. And I mean, I think you can speak to that, Wes. It's that it's almost like, I don't want to, you know, say like a dormitory or a college type campus, you know, not the negative parts of that, but a very homey environment. And you're with people your own age, you're with people. And here's another thing, too, to speak to what Steve said earlier, too. You don't fit the profile of, you know, you would think of someone, you know, as an addict. You're a white kid from suburbia, and it was somewhat easy for you to buy drugs and buy heroin.
Well,
so
that's
it's
a,
out
that's
there, it affects everybody.
That's a dirty little secret. We know for a fact, and Naperville police have been very honest about this, there's a lot of really well-heeled white kids who make regular trips into the city to the west side and the south side and buy heroin and, you know, support the gangs that then go out and shoot each other and shoot kids. I mean, it's a bad, bad cycle.
It's extremely, extremely bad. You know, now for me, I never even went into the city to get it. It was in the suburbs. I didn't have to go into it. You know, why drive the hour?
Somebody else was driving for you.
Exactly. Why drive the hour out here?
Was it hard to get, especially when you started doing heroin?
At that point, no. Once I got into it, I mean, it's like going to the store and buying booze or groceries. I mean,
well, the thing about treatment centers is, you know, obviously we don't talk about what goes on behind closed doors because that's part of the agreement, and that's also what it should be. But when you're sitting there talking to people who look like you, and talking to people who have also hit bottom, and then seeing people who look like your dad or me, who, you know, are just now turning their lives around, I assume that'd be a big part of the motivation to stay straight, right?
It is definitely, you know, I've heard countless number of stories and people who regret not getting sober at a younger age. So I'm blessed and I'm grateful for where I'm at right now, and I'm happy. You know?
Outside of paying it forward and telling your story, what do you want to do with the rest of your life?
I just want to, you know, spread the love and help people out. You know, make a good living and just be there for the next right thing.
When you think down the road about having your own kid someday, do you think more, well, that'd be a nightmare if my kid ever goes through what I put my parents through? Or do you think because of the knowledge you have, you'd be able to maybe help keep him from going down that path?
Well, I mean, I'm definitely, you know, not anytime soon do I want a child, but...
No, that makes your dad happy. And you've already taken a couple of years off his life, so thanks for making that announcement.
Yeah, right. A few more gray hairs, but... You know, I have the wisdom of addiction and the recovery aspect, which is extremely helpful to me and others around me. You know, later on, if I have a child, I can only help them so much. Just like my parents, they can only help me so much. I just have to be willing to make a change.
That's your advice, I would say, then, to people who are listening today who want to quit and find themselves in this case. It's rosecrantz.org, right? Rosecrantz.org. But find yourself a facility that works, and obviously we recommend Rosecrantz. Find yourself a facility that works for you and stop wasting your time. Stop wasting your life. I mean, don't do it for your parents. Do it for you.
Right. I mean, what's important is, for me, I had to hit that bottom. I had to hit that mental rock bottom.
And then you have to recognize that it is bottom.
Exactly. Right. Because I hit a bottom one time. You know, a few months later, I hit a whole different bottom. Mm-hmm. So it's really, you know, where's your limitations at?
Yeah. And one of the bottoms you don't wake up from.
Exactly.
Thank God you didn't get there. Dad, any advice for parents?
You have to be there for your child. I think parents in general have lost their direction. They want to be more besties and friends. But in reality, a parent is a parent for the rest of his life.
It's true.
And every day you should be teaching your child and giving that child life tools. Because that's the role of a parent, is to give them life tools. Because you're not on the earth forever. And once you're gone, you have to make sure that they have the life tools to get through life.
Well, yeah, I don't pretend to get inside your head and think you're beating yourself up or you're patting yourself on the back or anything in between. But he seems like a fine young man, and I know he had a lot to do with that.
He's taught me a lot. He has a different outlook on life, and I get to spend some good quality time with him, and he's made me look at my life a little bit different.
Are you amazed at your relationship now, or are you just... Don't think about that. You're just happy you're here.
I'm happy that Wes has found his path in life. And, you know, it's a difficult road. I understand that because the failure rate is about 99% in the first year.
Right.
I mean, that's a huge hurdle to get over.
One step at a time. It means something.
It's every day. It's one, you know, every day he gets out of bed, it's a step at a time. And I give him a lot of credit.
I give you both credit. Proud of you for telling your story. And thanks to the people at Rosecrans for all the great work they do. NBC News did a nice piece on Wes, which I know you can still find online. We'll also put this interview up as well if you joined us midstream. But God bless you, man. Keep up the good work.
Thank you very much.
And thanks for coming out.
Thanks for having us.
All right. We'll talk to you again. 9:57. John's next.